I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
First matter is a matter of the Commonwealth versus Stephon Diggs.
Good morning, ADA Drew Virtue for the Commonwealth.
Good morning, Your Honor. Andrew Federal from DC Kings.
Waiving the reading, sir?
Yes.
And not guilty, plea will enter.
All right. Commonwealth, any requests?
Commonwealth's pressing a stay away, no contact from the victim, including third party contact.
Any
issues? No.
All right. Those are the ones.
And next date, sir, April 1st.
We're going to have April 1st for pretrial motions.
Sir, on this matter will be continued until April 1st, 2026 at 9 a.m. That's for a pretrial hearing. Being released today on your own personal recognizance that the conditions will be released. They have to stay away and have no contact with the named victim, and that includes third-party contact.
This is the Christian Arcan Show on WEEI.
Hour number two here, Christian Arcan Show, WEEI. We're live in our Brighton studios, powered by Verizon. Nice to have you with us here tonight. We are Boston Sports Original, and along with Boston, we're broadcasting live all throughout New England. And if you're not in New England, don't forget, you can stream WEEI and the Christian Arcan Show on the Odyssey app, as well as the iHeartRadio and the TuneIn apps anytime you like. Before we get to what happened in Dedham District Court today, there's a couple of text messages I would like to read, and one mea culpa I would like to issue. I said that Patrick Mahomes lost his first Super Bowl. He lost his second Super Bowl, won his first Super Bowl. My bad. Got that one wrong. However, point still stands, I think. Eh, maybe it doesn't. But whatever. The point is that I believe that even with the Super Bowl loss, Drake May can be back. And that I think he will be back. I think that this is a team and a foundation that is certainly capable and has all the tools to be able to win a Super Bowl, maybe more than one. I absolutely believe that. They came close to doing it this year. They did have some help along the way, but I think that they can offset the help that they got by improving the roster and the natural progression of some of these young players as they get better and get older. I think all of that's going to factor into it as well. So sorry about the Mahomes thing. This one's pretty funny. This was right at the beginning of the show. Texter says, Arcand, I have bad news. I found you on Facebook, and I'm sorry to say it, you look like a dopey bastard. And then he follows it up with, I think a he might be a she, I guess, follows it up with, but you sound fine. So thank you, Texter. Thank you for that. You know, it's not hard to find out what I look like because we stream the show on YouTube and on Twitch every night. So you can watch the show. You can see what I look like. You don't have to go to Facebook for that. And I don't really go on Facebook anymore. I haven't really been on Facebook in years. Occasionally, someone will message me on Facebook, and I'll check the message. But like, I don't really go on there anymore. I'm mostly just on Twitter and Instagram, and I'm starting to dip my toe into TikTok a little bit. Mostly just posting clips from this. But like, that's, you know, I'm not doing dances and stuff. Like, I'm just
not yet.
Not yet. That's true. Just posting clips from the show.
Yeah, Facebook is just like my birthday reminder for people who I don't know off the top of my head.
That is a good use for Facebook because Facebook takes all the birthdays and they put it right in my calendar. So now every day I just, you know, check the calendar and bam, it's your friend's birthday. And I seem like a good guy, which I am. But, you know, I seem like one, which is really what it's all about. So, yeah. And it's funny because in these days, most people know what I look like. But when I was starting off and doing like late night here, there's no cameras on here. It was 2013. Hardly anything was streamed online at that point. And I would meet people who didn't know what I looked like, but had heard me on, you know, late night or filling in on some other show or something like that. And every single time, they would say, wow, I expected you to look really different. Every single time. I never got what they thought I would look like. But everyone was always surprised. Oh, yeah, no, I listened to you. I thought you would look different. Everyone said that. So I don't know if they thought I would look better, if they thought I would look worse. Probably not. Probably didn't think I would look worse, if I had to guess. When someone says, wow, I expected you would look different, it's usually not a compliment, you know, especially in radio. In radio, I mean, let's be honest here. We're all here because of our voices. If I was here for my face, I'd be on TV, you know, like those hunks in the midday. Jones and Key for, you know, Andy Hart, big TV guy. Fitzy. huge TV guy. Ted, big TV guy. Come to think of it, I'm pretty much the only non-TV guy at this place.
Well, you're a documentary guy.
I am a documentary guy.
You were on the Red Sox Netflix one and the one about Belichick and Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Very, very briefly. I was in both of those. I was in the promo for Thursday Night Football last year, and Andy was not. Mr. TV over there, that big blockhead of his would have taken up the whole screen. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah, Dedham, Steph Diggs. So, Steph Diggs today, and this caused a lot of traffic when I was trying to drop my son off at school, that's for sure. Steph Diggs made a brief appearance today in court, facing charges that he assaulted a private chef last year. He was originally scheduled to be arraigned on January 23rd, and that hearing was postponed until after the Super Bowl. The judge set a pretrial hearing for April 1st. He remains free on personal recognizance, was ordered to stay away from the victim. He didn't say anything. His defense team has categorically denied the allegations. Mitchell Schuster, do we have Mitchell Schuster? He was outside the building. He spoke. Diggs didn't say a word. But Mitchell Schuster, his attorney, one of his attorneys, and that's another part of the story that has additional details that I'll get to in a second here. But Mitchell Schuster came out and spoke on those, you know, those court steps, those same court, the same courthouse Karen Reed was in. And here's what Schuster said.
That he is completely innocent of these false allegations that have been alleged against him. We're confident that after the facts and evidence are reviewed in this case, he will be completely exonerated.
Complete exoneration, Mitchell Schuster saying. There were some motions that got granted today. The court granted the defense's motion that the victim turn over text messages from December 2nd. That was the day of the alleged assault. The defense alleges in a motion that the victim altered and deleted some messages provided to investigators to support her narrative. The defense also claims the argument was not about money, but that the victim lost the trust of her employer and feared losing her job. The defense argues that the additional communications will show ulterior and financial motives. Court records show, and this is the other part of it that's interesting. Yesterday, two of Diggs' attorneys left the case. They withdrew from the case, which could mean any number of things. But they were replaced by attorney Sarah Silva, and that guy you just heard, Mitchell Schuster, has been representing Diggs for another legal matter that he's dealing with that guy in the Ferrari, I think. That whole case in Maryland. I believe that Schuster's been his guy for that one, too. So maybe it's just as simple as Diggs only wanted to pay two lawyers and not four, or he just didn't like the job that these other guys were doing, or what. But he had two lawyers, and now he's got two new lawyers. Or he had two, he had more than that, and now he only has this many. Whatever it is, it's sort of odd. Sort of odd that right before the first court appearance, two lawyers would withdraw. I've seen lawyers withdraw from cases because the client was difficult, or sometimes it bled over into some kind of ethical, you know, dilemma or some kind of, you know, recusal. We can't, you know, conflict of interest type of thing. Sometimes it's something completely different. Sometimes it's just on the whim of the client. But in this case, it doesn't say that Diggs fired him. It says that they withdrew. So it was their call to do that. And I find that interesting. I think that between this and the Barmore situation, there's definitely a little bit more smoke to the Barmore situation than to this one. There is some smoke here, though. I mean, there's certainly some smoke here. There's a very bad allegation. And there's a bit of a paper trail, although the defense is saying that that's altered or it's been altered. And there's also voicemails, I think, from Cardi B. And those haven't really come out yet. We don't know. We only know that they exist. We don't know what they say. I don't know if they're going to be part of the case or what. But I do wonder if that has something to do with these lawyers stepping away. You know, like, I wonder if that has something to do with it, because I feel like if they had a slam dunk winning case with a high profile client, why would you withdraw? Why wouldn't you want everyone to see you and know who you are and all that if you know you're going to win? Unless it's something else. Anyway, there's that. And then there's just from a football perspective, because again, you know, he'll have his day in court. That's in April. And all the details will come out, and we'll discuss that then at that time, and we'll, you know, save our judgments for that. In the meantime, this could mean one of two things here for the Patriots. If Steph Diggs is part of the team next year, assuming that he gets through this process and there's no charges brought or anything. He's not found guilty. I think if he's found guilty, he's off the team. If he's not, or if there's some kind of settlement or who knows what, then I would imagine he'll be back, or at the very least will want to come back. You heard him talking after the game saying, yeah, I'd love to come back here. Mike Giardi was on with WEEI Afternoons today, and he had some thoughts about that. Here he is.
Do you bring Steph Diggs back?
Not at the money he's on. No, no, I don't. And I don't know what the happy medium is there. You know, he's only got 1.7 guaranteed, and then I think he gets $6 million on the third day of the league year, or second day of the league year, which is March 13th-ish. So, like, obviously, if he gets that, then he's probably here unless something unforeseen happened off the field again. But I'm trying to rework that number. He's not coming back with a cap hit of $28 million or $27 million. And there's a strong argument to be made that you can do better there. You know, four games in the postseason, 110 yards. He continued his habit of late season disappearances, which goes back to his time at Buffalo. So that's a spot I'd like to upgrade. And if you end up with nothing, you bring him back. But if you can get Alex Pierce, if that's what you view as an upgrade, or if there's a receiver out there, DJ Moore might be available. Like, if there's one of those things you could do that you say, no, that's better than Steph Diggs, then you do it.
Okay. Here's where you fall into some trouble. Is, yeah, Steph Diggs, that's a huge cap hit for him next year. Too much, if we're being perfectly honest, even for a guy with a 1,000-yard season. That's outrageous. I mean, that's just a big, big cap hit there. Very, very big. And maybe he'll restructure to stay. Maybe he won't. Maybe he wants to go get paid again. I don't know. I mean, listen, this will be, what, his fourth team in 4 years? If he goes somewhere else? Buffalo, Houston, New England, next team, right? I mean, that's, you know, four teams in 4 years. What do you want? Here's the thing, is he wasn't really a problem here. I mean, not behind the scenes. In Buffalo, behind the scenes, there was some, I mean, there was some real tension there between him and Josh Allen. There was the tension between him and the coaching staff. He didn't think he was getting the ball enough. He was just constantly a problem. I mean, he was just constantly bitching and complaining, and we all thought that that would sort of carry over here, and that might be a problem for Drake May, and that, you know, this may be the wrong guy to go after, and instead it was the complete opposite of that. Steph Diggs became, almost instantly, he became a leader on this team. He became someone that the other wide receivers looked up to. He became a safety valve for Drake May. I mean, he was vital and instrumental to almost all the strides that this offense made. Almost all of them. He didn't have much to do with the run game, but like in the passing game, Steph Diggs, he was right in the middle of all of it. Right in the center of all of it, literally. Before the games, who's in there pumping him up? Who's making the big speech? It's Diggs. He was that guy. He was that leader in that locker room. Now, here's where it gets tricky for Mike Vrabel. You have created this culture, and Vrabel's the culture. It's not the Steph Diggs culture. It's the Mike Vrabel culture, and Steph Diggs had to sort of acclimate to it. You remember the two of them didn't get off to a great start after the whole whatever that stuff was on the boat. it was a little tense maybe between the two of them. And then suddenly they were, you know, best friends. And suddenly Steph Diggs is laying it all out there, buying in completely, and not only that, but really taking and relishing in this leadership role that he has on this team and with this offense and with this young, young quarterback. And let me put it this way. When Mac Jones was here and you saw this great connection that was sort of developing with him and Josh McDaniels, and then Josh McDaniels left, you knew there was going to be hard to fill that void. It's not quite the same thing, but it is similar, that there was a great thing there. There was some real chemistry and connection there on and off the field, I think, with Diggs and May.
Yeah, thanks, Josh.
I think. It sure looked that way. I mean, again, you'd have to ask both of them. I think they both really enjoyed playing with each other this year. And they both said as much.
I've definitely found a little bit more joy in football. And
when Mac Jones went into the tank, we all sort of saw it and we could all understand it, and Bill Belichick didn't give a rip about him, and just that was that. You're not going to get that now from Mike Vrabel. He's way too invested in this. There's no way that you're going to see that same kind of dismissive behavior. But I also think that Steph Diggs just has so much say and so much, you know, dug in and invested in this team and what this team accomplished. And it's hard to imagine this team accomplishing all that without him. It's hard to picture the Patriots being as good as they were this year without Steph Diggs. Imagine they signed Keenan Allen instead. That was another guy who was available. Keenan Allen or Amani Toomer. Not Amani Toomer.
Was it Amani Toomey? No. Cooper. Who's the receiver that...
Are you thinking Amari Cooper?
Amari Cooper.
Okay.
Not Amani Toomey. Amari Cooper is who I was thinking of. Wow. Not the Giants receiver from the...
We're going all the way back to 2001.
Amari Cooper, not Amani Toomey. Amari Cooper was the guy who was very much available. I ended up retiring, but he was out there as well. It was those three guys. It was Diggs, it was Allen, it was Cooper, not Toomey. And Patriots ended up with Diggs. Allen went to the Chargers, and Cooper retired, and that was it. But imagine if you ended up with Allen or with Cooper. If that's who you stuck with. I don't know that this year goes the way that it did. I think that Diggs was that important. He was that important. And for Mike Vrabel, I think he was a very important guy on his side in that locker room. That's a guy that you want buying into your program and the way you do things. And maybe the next veteran doesn't buy into the same way Steph Diggs does. And maybe the next guy you bring in, A.J. Brown, whoever it is, maybe they're not quite the good soldier that Steph Diggs was this year. Now, Diggs had his off-the-field stuff, obviously. We just talked about it. But in terms of on the field and in the locker room, he was a model citizen. And not only that, but played a huge role in this team's success on offense, which really propelled them to most of those wins this year. So this is going to be tricky. This is going to be tricky for everybody. It's going to be tricky for Diggs. It's going to be tricky for May. It's going to be tricky for Vrabel and Kraft and everybody else. Tell you it's not going to be tricky for those two lawyers who withdrew because they're washed their hands clean of that whole thing, which I still am kind of put off by. I think that the conventional thinking here, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I think the conventional thinking was, okay, someone's going after Diggs. They're trying to get something from him. Could be a cash shakedown, just trying to get some money or whatever. The lawyers withdrawing makes me wonder if there's more to this than maybe that. And maybe there was all along. Who knows?
No new macaroni.
Sort of going by the way it was discussed. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike Dussault, Patriots.com, for the final guest of the Patriots Viking funeral. We'll hear from a company man himself, Patriots.com. Mike Dussault joins us right after Joe Braverman. Get you caught up on what's trending.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You anticipate coming back next year?
Oh, yeah, unless they opt out of the contract, you know what I'm saying? I anticipate being here, so I hope so. Love my guys, you know what I'm saying? I had a hell of a year playing with them. Built some real family-like bonds, so I hope so.
Christian Arcand Show here, WEEI. We got Mike Dussault joining the show here in just a few minutes. I didn't have my headphones on. Was that Diggs you just played there, talking about how he wants to come back? I thought it was, but I was eating my dinner. I'd be perfectly honest with you here, folks. I usually am ready for the comeback from these breaks. Joe does a very good job of telling me, you got a minute, you got 30 seconds, you got this. But I just needed one more dumpling. I needed one more dumpling, and I missed the rejoin. Anyways, Diggs wants to be back. I would imagine that the locker room wants him back. I would imagine Drake May wants him back. The other wide receiver, Kayshon Boutigan, these other wide receivers, I'm sure, definitely took to him as a leader on this team, leader in this offense. And he's probably pretty fun to hang out with, too, for being, keeping it real funky. He's got this superstar baby mama, which now he doesn't have anymore. Or do we know what's up with that?
The biggest thing is don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Do we know? Did they really break up? Because she's on tour now. Cardi's out on tour. And it's tough to break up with your man right before you go out on tour, I would think. Although I feel like Taylor Swift does that all the time. Taylor Swift is constantly in this like cycle of breaking up with somebody. I know she hasn't broke up with Travis Kelce, but like, you know what I mean? Before Travis, BT, as the Swifties like to say. She would be going, Harry Styles, whoever, just, and then they'd break up and she'd write a whole album about him and then she'd go on tour and that was that. So maybe that's like what Cardi's doing. Either way, tough week all around for Steph Diggs. Loses the Super Bowl. Cardi B breaks up with him, or maybe it was mutual, I don't know, but they're not. It doesn't seem like they're together anymore. And his lawyers withdrew from the case, which is also strange. Although we may have some insight into that. Damien is in Lawrence. Go ahead, Damien.
Hey, okay, thanks for taking my call. You yeah. left out Drake May, couldn't get him the ball in the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
no,
true.
So allegedly in the gospel world, Cardi
gospel?
B, yeah, like in the media world, like in YouTube and stuff, I don't know if I, City Nice, like the people I follow on YouTube
okay.
that follow hip-hop and what's going on, mm-hmm. that's right. They have allegedly, Cardi, the girl that's behind the case with Stephon Diggs.
The chef, yeah.
She has messages from Cardi B threatening her and Stephon Diggs, telling her that they better sign a closure, saying that that she can't discuss anything that happened while she was working with him and stuff like that. And
like a non-disclosure, like an NDA, signing. Something like that, Damien. Thanks for the call. I got to let you go because Deuce is about to join us here. I hadn't heard that. I'm not going to try and verify it right now. But it is curious why those two lawyers bounced. And I did think the early parts of this that it seemed like there were voicemail in that pretrial stuff. It seemed like there was some sort of voicemail, something like that was going to come into evidence. Maybe it did. And the lawyers said, let's get out of this one. I don't know. But I guess we'll find out. We'll all find out together about that. Anyways, a lot of drama with that guy. From the boat to Cardi B to this to that thing with the Ferrari and all of that. I mean, just, you know, a guy who needs to make some better decisions in his life, I think. And for more on that, a guy who always makes good decisions, our good friend from Patriots.com, Mike Dussault, joins us here for the final day of the Patriots-Viking funeral. Deuce, how we doing, buddy?
Oh, man, Arkan, I'm still recovering from that week, and not just the game. It was nuts. It was fun. Unfortunate how it ended, but, yeah, I'm still gathering myself after that whole week in San Francisco.
Yeah, which I am very jealous you got to be out of this weather for a little bit. But let's talk about that game. I know we're very much removed from it, so we don't have to go play-by-play or anything. But I watched Mic'd Up in the NFL Films thing, which came out yesterday, and was really struck, Deuce, by how much more confident Seattle was going into the game. It seemed like they really just had this swagger about themselves that the Patriots really lacked. Why do you think that is? Why weren't the Patriots as charged up as you would expect them to be, many of these guys playing in their first Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, we were on Radio Row last week, and Mike Reese brought up a great point that really hadn't occurred to me at the time. He was, you know, pointing out all the veteran talent on the defensive line for the Seahawks, which, of course, we knew they were really good. But would you look at those guys, you know, Leonard Williams, first round pick, you know, among others, the whole group, and that was their time. And just going up against a Patriots offensive line, clearly had two rookies on the left side, you know, some veterans on the other side. I don't know if they were quite ready for what Seattle was going to bring. Let's face it, not a lot of teams were ready for that. I know that's probably simplifying it a little bit, but really, that's probably where the game was won and lost, was right there on the defensive line for Seattle, and just the pressure that they got on Drake early got New England out of any kind of flow. They were never able to establish it, and things just kind of unraveled from there.
What was your take on Drake May's demeanor, not just in the Super Bowl, but all throughout the postseason? It seemed like, you know, a lot of that confidence that he had during the regular season was kind of sapped. The O-line wasn't as good, obviously, and there may have been an injury, but it did also seem like there was just sort of a different body language, different everything, different aura about Drake May. Did you pick up on that?
Yeah, we didn't see MVP candidate Drake. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what made him so great during the regular season, was his ability to throw with anticipation. I mean, the guy set a record for pass completions of 72%. I mean, it's insane the number of passes that he was able to complete, and not just the short stuff, but down the field and picking teams apart, never able to get to that, you know, in the playoffs. So it's unfortunate. Of course, there's a number of different factors. You mentioned, you know, the injury, the quality of the defenses, and really, as you know, I kind of sit here, I mean, it's a great season, and you've got so much from Drake this year. You gave him so much experience. He's seen it all now. He's, what, 23 years old. He's now been to a Super Bowl. He's gone on the road and had to play Denver. You know, he's gone to Baltimore. He's won in Buffalo. He's won in Miami. He didn't play his best football at the end, but, you know, I think the hope going forward is that just this experience that he got this year, which, I mean, it's hard to ask for much more quality experience than he got this year, that's going to serve him really well. And he's going to look back at that experience in the Seattle game when, oh, by the way, they go to Seattle next year to play the Seahawks.
Right.
and be able to build off of that and play up to the level that he played at during the regular season.
They have a very tough road schedule. Tough schedule altogether next year, just based on the opponents. Yeah. And we will look ahead, and I do want to get to that. But one more thing on the game. What was your opinion of Josh McDaniels' game plan on offense?
Oh, man. I mean, it's easy to sit here and say, oh, I wish, you know, we had some times when they were blitzing that there were guys on, you know, hot routes and turning around and you see everybody going vertical and there's nowhere for Drake to go to the ball. But, you know, as we sit here, I mean, we've done it all week. It's just, it's easy to pick this thing or that thing. It's just, it completely devolved for them. There was no ability to string plays together, to build any momentum. And, you know, would a couple different play calls have made that much of a difference? Maybe. But at the same time, I look at the sum of the parts when you got Will Campbell in the crosshairs, you got Drake in the crosshairs, you got Josh McDaniels in the crosshairs, you got, you know, Jared Wilson in the crosshairs, you got the receiving core not, you know, able to help bring in some of those passes. So, you know, it's all part of the problem for sure in that game. And I mean, let's just face it, Seattle was the better team. They came to play. They had a bunch of veterans. It was their time. And I think the Patriots just, you know, unfortunately, weren't able to do much of anything that whole game.
No, they certainly weren't, and Will Campbell definitely took the brunt of it. Vrabel came out and was very, defended his guy, said he's not moving, he's not going to be there, he's a left tackle. Do you believe him? Do you believe that that is set in stone, that at least one more year for Will Campbell at left tackle before they reassess his situation, or could it be sooner than that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think it was a good vote of confidence, and I'm glad that, you know, Vrabel said that, because let's face it, that's what we would have been talking about all off season. I'm sure it still will be what we're talking about all off season. But, you know, before the injury to Will Campbell, I think he was having a pretty solid year. And, you know, especially playing against a fellow rookie, which he didn't really, you know, get much of that veteran help. He talked so much in the past about, you know, rookie left tackles or young left tackles having an experienced left guard that they're next to. So, you know, I saw a lot of really good stuff out of Will Campbell this year. No question. He's got to improve. And I mean, you go, I listen really too to the large number of former NFL players, NFL coaches that have chimed in and said, look, he got roasted in this game quite a few times, but at the same time, he's a talented kid, love his demeanor. And I think, yeah, he's got another year there, but just a lot of really hard decisions, I think, across the roster this year where, you know, essentially a lot of the team is coming back. I'd say the majority, there's not a lot of big name free agents where it's like, you know, what are we going to do? You know, edge is definitely one of those positions, but, you know, the whole offensive line comes back and you look at, well, Morgan Moses gave you 17 games this year. Garrett Bradbury was very good this year. Both of those guys were credited with, you know, turning over the culture and really bringing everybody together. So it's just, there's no easy, all right, let's put this guy, we can get this guy here. You know, I just find myself, they're going to have some hard decisions to make. I think you heard that from Vrabel at the end where, you know, it's not going to be the same exact group. We can't run it right back with these guys. But, you know, at the end of the day, Arcan, I look at it, Mike Vrabel built the team this year. They were not the most talented team. Nobody thought they were going to the Super Bowl. Few people thought they would even win the division. So to see how everybody came together, no matter how the team building goes in this offseason, you got Drake, you got Vrabel. I feel like he's going to build another team. They'll be able to overcome some of those holes if they're not able to fill them all this offseason.
We're talking with Deuce from Patriots.com. Let's go ahead and talk about one of the decisions that I don't think should be very difficult at all, and that's Christian Gonzalez, who's now available for an extension. They could go 50-year option, I guess, if they wanted to, but is this going to be the next highest-paid corner in the NFL here? Do you think the Patriots will make that commitment to him?
Oh, man, it was funny. During the season, I remember, you know, there was some conversation about, oh, is he, you know, the right fit? Do they like him, you know? And I'm like, wait till we get to the playoffs. Wait till you start seeing him go against number one receivers. That's when you're going to realize how valuable Christian Gonzalez is. I mean, look, the end of the Patriots dynasty there at the end of Bill, it kind of was a talent deficit, right? Like they couldn't draft well. They couldn't find the talent. They didn't have those elite players. So I think it's a pretty simple thing. When you find an elite player like that, you draft him. He wants to be here. He's part of the culture, part of the fabric of the team. It's just a no-brainer to try to be able to keep that guy around. Now, we've seen in the past that, you know, past regimes, how do they handle that kind of thing? You know, fifth-year option, I don't think you want to have him going into that year without a new contract. I'm sure he's going to be pushing for it this spring. So Christian Gonzalez, outstanding talent. He's young. He's as athletic as they come. And look, we're going to have to face all those teams again. So you want to go into Seattle and face JSN with, you know, a disgruntled Christian Gonzalez? I don't think it's a great idea. He's an outstanding player. And really, as a Super Bowl, just proved his worth.
Yeah, the only guy on the whole team, I thought, that really played with edge and confidence and all those things that Seattle was playing with. Gonzalez had that, and it didn't seem like really anybody else did, on or off the field. Like, it was just, it was palpable almost watching that mic'd up. When we talk about the offseason here, Deuce, there's a myriad of different places where they can go to try and shore up and buttress this team. Where do you think they start, and on offense and defense, where would you, what would you put at the top of the list?
Well, before I jump into that, Arkin, let me point out Craig Woodson. I thought Woodson was one other guy that really came to play in that game. And really, the whole playoff came in as a mid-round draft pick. A kid didn't really know, wasn't making a lot of plays, but was out there playing a lot of snaps. I just thought in the playoffs he was outstanding.
He was good.
But he really came on. And I thought that that's a really positive sign to see a kid like that play the whole season and then really see the game start to slow down to the point where you're seeing him make plays in the Super Bowl. I'd agree with you outside of those two, though. Those are the two guys that really made the impact. But I think the first position as we get into the offseason, you got to look at his edge. And, again, Harold Landry, counting on him to be a big part of that team last year, he got hurt. I mean, I don't know what was going on with him that whole year. I mean, it was really that New Orleans game where it felt like he had an ankle or a knee, and then it was from there, it seemed like he couldn't ever get back to the level that we saw him in the early game. So Kalavon Chaisson stepped up. He's a free agent. Seems like a really good fit for what they want to do. And you got Max Crosby, that circling in the background. But I think edge is such an important position. You really like what you have in Milton Williams and Christian Barmore, but they need complementary pieces on the edge. And you saw that with Seattle. That's what they have, with Lawrence, who's an outstanding player as well. So I'd really focus on there. The offensive line, how do you do it? I'm not sure exactly. And, of course, it always looms over you. You want that number one wide receiver. You want that player that's going to be Drake's, binky in the key moments. I think we saw Steph Diggs do that somewhat during the season, tailed off near the end. Some interesting decisions there at the wide receiver position. So really look at the edge, the offensive line, and the wide receiver position is, place. And one more thing I'll throw in there, Arkan. Tight end. Drake seems to love to throw to these bigger players. I mean, he's under duress in the Super Bowl. Who's he looking towards? Mac Hollins. I mean, Kyle Pitts, I know he's been a little bit of a disappointment down there in Atlanta, but he's a super athletic guy, really long guy. I mean, he's really similar to Mac Hollins, I'd say. But he's a player I'd kind of keep an eye on. Tight end. Austin Hooper's going to be a free agent. Hunter Henry's getting up there a little bit. That might be another spot, too, where maybe you can't get the proverbial number one wide receiver, but you can go out and try to find a tight end that can really help in that capacity of helping Drake have a reliable target, especially a big one. He seems to like to throw to those big guys.
Yeah, definitely seems that way. All right, Deuce, before we let you go here, you've been doing great work all year long covering this team, coming on the show, talking to me. What is your favorite moment, play, game, whatever, you pick it from the season this year, if you had to pick one?
Oh, boy. I mean, I got to go with beating Buffalo up in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the moment where you really started to gain some confidence. If you want to go specific play, the slow motion throw to Diggs along the sidelines.
Yeah.
I know everybody knows exactly which one I'm talking about, but to go up there in Buffalo and to win that game, it was just an outstanding kind of coming out party for the team. But there were so many great moments this year, and it's just a bummer. Right now this week, there are 31 teams in the NFL that suck, and the Patriots get the suck spotlight this week because they lost the Super Bowl in such a fashion as they did. But I don't want that to take away from just how much they outreach their expectations and gave us games like that Buffalo win, or even winning in Miami week two, where you don't know what to expect from this team. You know how hard it is to win down there. So no matter what happens again this offseason, I feel really good about the team that Mike Vrabel has built. And you just hope Drake's going to take this experience and really use it as a launching pad to get to that MVP level, because we were all surprised by that as it was. No one expected that either. So maybe next year we can get back to that level and stay there consistently through the whole season.
Mike Deuceaux, great talking with you all season, my friend. It's been a lot of fun having you on, and I'm sure we'll be talking around free agency and the draft and all of that. Thanks so much for all the time you've given the show over the course of the season. It's been great talking with you.
Well, it's been great talking with you. Thank you so much for having me on, and we're on to 2026.
All right, that's Deuce, Patriots.com. Check out his stuff. It's great, and he's been great joining the show here all season long. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Quick break. When we come back, the NFL owners are the biggest bunch of freaking babies in the entire world. They took away one thing that I really enjoyed about the offseason, those report cards from the NFLPA. We'll get to that story next.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South. and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Look, the report card, you know, I think it's very important. I think it just reminds staffs and owners of things that we need to improve on. Going forward, you know, the Kraft family, once again, when you see a grade that's not favorable, it does bring attention to it. In saying that, we put together a group that's really going to try to attack some of the problems or some of the things that we see that we've seen on the report card. But it's going to take time. It's going to take time to improve those things.
Haven't heard that guy's voice in a while. It was Gerard Mayo. Remember him? Coached the team a while ago. Can't remember how that year went. That was him, I think, after he got the job, talking about the report card. Is that when that was?
The label I have here is from March 25th, so it was probably at the coaches' meetings that they usually have. Coaches and owners' meetings.
After he'd gotten hired?
Yeah.
Right, because it wouldn't have been after last year. Where they did get a very poor report card, once again, the Patriots and the Kraft family. I mean, it was 31st out of 32nd is how I remember them getting graded out. Not in everything, but in most things. And this, of course, was based off of the last year of Bill Belichick. So, again, it's important to remember those things. And it's very important to remember them because we're not going to have these anymore. It's over. The NFL won their grievance over the Players Association. They are not going to publicize the report cards anymore. Now, the union has gone out and said, we're still going to grade, and we're still going to have everybody do this anonymous survey. We're just not going to publicize the results anymore. To which I say, well, then the owners win. The owners win. And when I tell you that this is some of the most terry cloth, soft, baby back bitch move I've ever seen by these NFL owners, I'm not exaggerating. This is pathetic. Throwing a tantrum because your employees gave you bad feedback and all these people who consume the game and can see what a bunch of cheap a-holes you all are. Not all of you, some people. Some of these teams graded out very well. Some of them did. But many of them, including your New England Patriots, did not. And to make such a fuss out of this, to make this such an important priority, just really shows how small a lot of these guys really are, doesn't it? Can't handle any sort of criticism. Can't handle people knowing that they neglect their facilities and that they don't have basic things for these players and their families. That the food sucks, whatever it is that they're voting on. Who was 30? I think the Jets were at the bottom. Or they were close. I don't know. I know the Patriots were 31st. That's all I remember. I could probably go back and find it. Are the old ones still going to be up there? Can we still look at the old ones?
I have the 2025 grades in front of me.
Okay. We'll get to those in just a second. Brooke Pryor at ESPN was all over this story. I saw Schefter tweeted it, but he tweeted her story. That the NFL won its grievance. According to a memo distributed to all 32 NFL teams and obtained by ESPN this morning, the NFLPA said it will continue collecting the report card responses even if they cannot publicize them. An arbitrator found that the report cards violated the collective bargaining agreement by disparaging NFL clubs and individuals.
Oh. You guys disparaged us.
You guys told everybody about our crappy facilities. You guys told us that there's no place for any of the parents to bring their kids in the building. You guys told on us. We don't like that. Stop telling on us. According to the memo, the arbitrator found through the hearings with the NFLPA's witness and counsel that the report cards were designed by the union to advance its interests under the guise of a scientific exercise. Oh, well, God forbid they try and advance their interests. The NFLPA refused to produce data related to previous surveys, and the union's witness and counsel admitted the union cherry-picked topics and responses to include in the report cards. Oh, no. The memo also stated the players had no role in the commentary included with the report cards. It was written by union staffers, and the union chose which anonymous player quotes to use or exclude. So, can't say they had no role in the commentary. They had no role in which commentary was added to the report card, maybe, but they commented. It was their commentary that got used. The The arbitrator also found that the union applied the weight to each topic and directly impacted the final alphabetical grade for each team.
Oh. Oh, man.
Brian McCarthy, NFL spokesman. This guy McCarthy's unbelievable. He really is. They put him right out front. He is the first line of defense. He is the first meat shield in a long line of NFL meat shields. We're pleased with the decision from the arbitrator upholding the party's CBA agreement and prohibiting the NFLPA from disparaging our clubs and individuals through report cards based on data and methodologies that it has steadfastly refused to disclose. We remain committed to working in partnership with the NFLPA and an independent survey company to develop and administer a scientifically valid survey to solicit accurate and reliable player feedback as the parties agreed to in the CBA. I wonder what that's going to be.
I appreciate your opinion, but that's a weak-ass opinion. What?
Our independent survey company, and here's our independent surveyor, Roger Goodell. What do you think about that, everybody? He's going to be the new survey. You have to answer to him. Come on. No, we're going to do it our way. We're going to have you answer our questions. Like, that kind of defeats the whole point, you bozos. The whole point of this is for someone to hold you accountable, not for you to change the rules and make it how you want it. Like, bleep
what
you.
A bozo.
This is, I mean, that's, oh, God, it completely misses the whole point. And it also misses the point of why there was such an interest in this. Why there's such an interest from fans. Like, why should fans care what the players think about the facilities and stuff? But fans did care. Fans around here cared. Jets fans, Bengals fans, all these teams that had these ass grades. And not all of them did. And that's why I find this so funny. Don't you think the owners who got good grades would have been like, yeah, keep putting this thing out. We look great. People are all about us. I'm going to try and find the list. Okay. Here are the final ownership grades from last year. One team got an F. The Jets. Jets got an F. The Cardinals and Panthers both got D minuses. Steelers and Patriots both got a D. I don't know how that's possible because I remember the Patriots were 31 out of 32, but whatever. It doesn't really matter. Buccaneers, D plus. The Chiefs, a C minus. Rams and Bengals, a C. Giants, Browns, and Seahawks all graded C plus. Eagles, Bills, Cowboys, Titans, and Colts, a B. I feel like everybody above C plus should want these things to keep going, and that's a good amount of teams. Not everybody got crapped on in this thing. There's more teams with a B grade or higher than there are below that. B grades, Eagles, Bills, Cowboys, Titans, Colts, B plus, Lions, Jaguars, A minus, Packers, Niners, Bears, that's 10. A grade, Broncos, Chargers, Texans, Raiders, Commanders, Ravens, Saints. A plus, Dolphins, Falcons, Vikings. That's 20 teams. That's the majority of teams graded pretty well here. So you know what that really means? You know what really happened here? The owners of the Jets, Cardinals, Panthers, Steelers, Patriots, Bucks, Chiefs, Rams, Bengals, etc., all threw a big temper tantrum and soiled their diapies because they didn't like that they were getting bad grades. When what they could have done, and should do, is do something about these bad grades. Try and fix them. How is that not the first thing in their mind? You know, the first thing, well, let's fight the Players Association and make it so they can't tell everybody how bad we are at our jobs.
Do
and,
something when you know that you need to do something.
Thank you, Wiggy. Let's make sure that no one can find out how cheap and sleazy we are. All right? That's going to be the priority. Not actually doing something about these poor grades we're getting. Not upgrading these things that the players and our employees are very loudly and publicly saying they don't think are adequate or acceptable. Instead of doing something about that, let's try and kill the whole report card. Let's do that. Oh, is that sad? I mean, if that's not a perfect indication of this billionaire class and how they look at the rest of the world, boy, I don't know what is. Anyway, wanted to get that off my chest. Very, very weak, soft baby move by the NFL owners. And not all of them, because I don't think the Dolphins and the Falcons and the Vikings and all these teams with good grades really had much to do with this. I wish they would have fought a little harder to keep this thing. But unfortunately, it's a big club and you ain't in it. And there you go. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. 8 o'clock headlines coming up next. This is some of the most terry cloth, soft, baby back bitch move I've ever seen.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.